Welcome to Gruesome, your horrific true crime podcast. This is episode 20.
20!
Kitty Genovese and Winston Mosley. I'm Connie, along with the chief of the grammar police, Meg. She's going to tell you all about it.
I gave a little salute when you said that, because that is true. Please use there properly in front of me, or I will karate chop you.
Watch those commas. Watch the commas. That's what gets me. I throw them everywhere, and she's like, nope, you don't need it there. And I'm like, I don't care.
Change the whole meaning of your sentence.
That's fine.
Speaking of commas and being the grammar police, I am in college as a 30-something year old right now.
Aren't we all?
And
it's fine.
I'm in Psych 101, just the very first one. It's very basic and beginner, and it's interesting, right? Like, you're interested in psychology.
I dig it.
And I have always kind of been interested. I think everyone, if you're into true crime, you're probably also interested in psychology. Like, that's the same
if you
niche.
Don't come out and say I'm interested in psychology, it's because you don't realize that you're interested in psychology because of true crime.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the same. It all goes together.
And I think when you're interested in it, you start reading a lot about a little bit of things. Like, you become a jack of all trades. Like, somebody tells you something and you're like, oh, I read this article about that, right?
Yeah, it's like really weird how much random stuff about the human brain that you realize that you know.
Yeah, and that's kind of what has been happening to me in class. But last week in class, we started talking about the bystander effect. And that is when it's when people are less likely to react or respond or help someone in a situation if there is another person around. Like, they won't do it if there are other people around.
And, you know, I see that on that, like, the hidden camera shows.
Yeah, people are just like, wow, what's happening? Why are they doing that? Act like you don't see anything. Look away. In my textbook, and in literally almost every intro psych textbook, they use Kitty Genovese's murder as the example for the bystander effect.
Oh.
Yeah. When it just kind of like breezed over it in my book. But
and you were like, I have to know more.
I was like, wait, what happened? Why? Where did it happen? When did it happen? Because I'm the co-host of a true crime podcast and I need to know. There was a survey done by American Psychologist in 2007, class of 07, shout it out.
Whoop.
And in the 10 main like undergrad psych books they found, the Genovese case was in all 10 of them. 8 textbooks suggested that witnesses watched as Genovese was murdered, and 2 textbooks stating that some or most of the witnesses heard but could not see the attack. So it's incorrectly reported in the majority of these textbooks what happened.
Oh.
Yeah. Which is why I wanted to do it, because I started reading it and I was like, this isn't true.
Yeah, I have to.
Exactly. There was one sentence after they talked about this case in my book and it was like, there's found to be many errors, but they didn't clear up what those errors were. So it interested me.
Anyways. You're like, what errors? It's my duty with this platform to say the errors.
Exactly. And I will. But before I do that, trigger warning, murder, necrophilia, hostages, being held against your will, rape, mistreatment of the LGBTQ community. We're going to have just like a real wild time tonight. Today.
We've been letting you guys off easy.
Okay. So Kitty was born Catherine Genovese on July 7th, 1935 in Brooklyn, New York City. She was the oldest of 5 siblings. And if classmates that Kitty went to school with recalled her later in life, they described her as having a sunny disposition, self-assured beyond her years. She was 19 and her mother witnessed a murder in Brooklyn.
Oh.
And she has 4 other kids younger than Kitty. So she did what I think most moms would do. And she moved the family to Connecticut.
Yep, I would move to Connecticut if I witnessed a murder.
Especially in your neighborhood.
Yeah, that's insane.
So Kitty stayed in New York. She's 19, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're like, I love Brooklyn. This is where I want to be. She moved in with her grandparents. She got married. And that marriage was annulled later that year. And so she moved into her own apartment and got a job as a bartender.
Strong, independent woman. I like it.
She was. She did that for a while. But in 1961, she was 27. She was arrested for bookmaking. And I was like, was making books illegal in 1961? And it was, because bookmaking is being a bookie.
Yeah.
And I did not know that. I was like, were they banned books? What kind of books? She was taking and paying out bets on horse races.
You're so cute.
I really had no idea.
What in the Les Miserables?
Yes, precisely, my friend. So she got arrested for making horse race bets, for making books. And it got her fined $50, but she was also fired from her bartending job. So she landed another bartending gig in Queens. And eventually she started running that place because the owner was never there. And she lived in Queens with her girlfriend, Marianne. Her girlfriend, not her like friend that is a girl. It is her girlfriend.
Okay, I was going to ask that, but I didn't know how to ask that without sounding rude because I didn't want to be offensive.
I understand. I it is her girlfriend, yeah. Yes. They okay. are a couple. But it's also the 60s, so this is...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Good for her. Like,
yeah. She left from the bar that she was working at March 13th, 1964 at 2:30 a.m. And this was the morning that she was murdered. Kitty didn't realize when she left the bar that a man named Winston Mosley had watched her leave, followed her red Fiat home, and when she arrived at her apartment building, she parked about 100 feet away from the rear entrance and began walking inside. Mosley approached Kitty and she ran. She headed for the front of her building, but he caught her and stabbed her in the back twice with a hunting knife. Yeah. She screamed and screamed. She called for help. She yelled that someone had stabbed her. One of her neighbors eventually called out of one of the apartment building's windows, "Leave that girl alone." And that scared Winston off. But that was the extent of the help that she received that night, even though this happened in the center of several apartment buildings that were very close together. She was in kind of like a courtyard alley area.
Oh.
So after he ran off, she crawled to the back rear entrance again, and she was out of view from the surrounding apartment buildings, and she's bleeding and dying. Some witnesses saw Winston Mosley get in his car and drive away, but he actually only moved his car to hide it, and he returned 10 minutes later. He was wearing a hat that would cover his face, so he disguised himself. He had seen from his window when he got in his car that she wasn't dead, that she had moved out of the way, and so he returned to finish what he had set out to do. Kitty, who was practically unconscious in the doorway of the building, he found her. She immediately started screaming again, so he stabbed her with his hunting knife in the neck.
Oh my God.
He stabbed her more than 10 times until she just was moaning and not screaming. And he could hear apartment doors opening, but Winston assumed that no one would come toward the screams. So he decided to rape her.
Right there?
Right there.
Ugh.
He pulled down her pants and saw that she was on her period. So he stuck his knife up her vagina and gave himself an orgasm.
No.
Yeah. There's a trigger warning for a reason.
Oh my God.
He stole her wallet when he was done, had $49 in it. He stole it. He stole her makeup and her car keys, and he left Kitty to die. The entire attack lasted 30 minutes, and despite being surrounded by apartments and people, and she has screamed and yelled for help, not one person intervened. Other than that,
no one even called the police.
So we'll kind of get into that, but no, not really. This is the bystander effect. Like,
oh my God.
Mosley himself said that he came back because he knew that that man who had yelled out his window would just close his window and go back to sleep. He knew that people wouldn't do anything to stop him because they never do.
And that's like a crazy sobering realization where that is true.
Yeah. Isn't that scary?
Yeah.
One of Kitty's neighbors, after the screaming had stopped, did step out of her apartment, and she found Kitty and yelled for someone to call an ambulance. And she held her until it arrived at 4:15. But Kitty died officially on the way to the hospital from her 14 stab wounds.
Oh my God.
And this was before 911 was a thing.
Because
911 hasn't always been around. It didn't happen until really the 70s. But this case was part of the reason it was implemented.
Yeah.
So the day after this happened, the New York Times ran a paragraph article about it. But the day after that, they ran a huge article about it with the headline, that said 37 who saw murder and didn't call police. And it was in all these initial reports that 37 people had seen what happened and just ignored it because that is what the police told the media. But it was also like 4 a.m. when they're reporting this, right? So it's probably just someone who was tired. He was like, yeah, we've got about 38 witnesses. So in general, 38 people heard her screaming, saw it happening, saw the blood, did nothing. That's what they think happened. And it's been debated. Some studies about this case, because it has been studied since it happened, say that 12 people heard the attack, 2 called the police, and another one put the number at around 49 witnesses due to there being more than one person in each apartment. But what matters is that there weren't 37 people who actually saw it happen. There were probably 37 people who heard it happening.
Yeah.
A few more actually saw it. And the one guy who like drunkenly yelled out the window to leave her alone. So they run that headline, 37 saw murder, didn't call police. And they followed up with another article where they start interviewing psychologists. Why would no one help? And all of these articles have all these incorrect facts in them. It's super sensationalist. And it spurred these two specific psychologists. Their last names were Latane and Darley. They dedicated their careers to understanding why witnesses are less likely to help someone if someone else is present. But the media, like the New York Times specifically, they just keep using it because it's a lesson in morality for readers. Like, society's going down the hole, which is an angle. Because remember, I said earlier, we're in 1964. It's the middle of the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
So they're saying, this is how the way society is going and nobody's doing anything about it. See something, say something. And the case and all of the studies and all the media that came along with it was one of the major reasons that 911 happened and neighborhood watch programs were developed and implemented. It started a nationwide thing.
Yeah, because you think about, like, if there's no easy, and I guess it's not something I thought about. Like, I never realized.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, 911, call 911. But
it wasn't always there. Yeah. You just had to call the local police. You had to call an ambulance. You had to call a specific place. There wasn't just one number.
Not like a dispatch. Mm-hmm. That just like took care of it all.
I was also surprised. I was like, yeah, I guess 911, someone had to invent it.
Yeah. Man, that's freaking insane.
Yeah. So Mosley, he escaped that night. He just bailed. Kitty's girlfriend, Marianne, had to identify her body.
Oh.
But after she had identified it, the police decided that Marianne was a suspect.
Are you serious?
Yes. Why? Because they are lesbians. And to be gay in 1964 was still a crime in New York City. And it was enforced enthusiastically.
Oh my God.
It's crazy. It's bullshit. Marianne was devastated. She's like broken. She still does interviews about how it broke her heart.
Yeah, I can't even imagine, like, one, having to identify someone that you love and plan to spend your life with in the most brutal way. Like, I mean, she was
brutalized. Had to identify the body around 5 a.m. And at 7 a.m., a cop knocked on her door, took her down to the station, and they questioned her for 6 hours. And most of that was about their sex life.
What, like, it's a kink to have a knife shoved up your vagina? That is not how this...
So they assumed that it was like jealous rage, or like she saw her with a man or something and decided to take it out on her. That is,
oh my God.
I know.
That is disgusting. Like, for the police, that's disgusting.
Yeah. And after this, they let Marianne go, but suddenly every single person knew that they were a couple. They weren't just friends living together, and it's illegal. So Marianne was suddenly outed to her entire community. And after that, no one would associate with her because they were scared of being outed.
My God.
Super sad. Marianne ended up moving and hasn't been back to that location since then.
Oh, I don't freaking blame her.
Yeah, it's been 60 years. She hasn't been back. Oh, I know. This is so super sad. But let's keep talking about Winston.
Douchebag.
Because the Kitty Genovese murder is horrific, but it is not the craziest shit this dude did.
What?
Yeah. It is. Like, you're like, wow, that's so messed up. Nope, not even. Just wait. So by day, Winston Mosley was an intelligent, soft-spoken, 29-year-old machine operator. He was married to a night shift nurse. He had 2 children, 5 German shepherds, a clean record. His mother lived with him to help watch his children. And again, just kind of bringing it back to that civil rights thing, this was a black man in the 60s. He was doing pretty well for himself, considering the the era.
Yeah.
However, his wife was a night shift nurse, and it was a large part of the reason he felt like he might be able to sneak out at night and prey on women. Mm. So the previous July 1963, Mosley murdered 15-year-old Barbara Kralik. He broke into her parents' home, stabbed and raped her.
In her parents' home?
In her parents' home. She's 15. Her parents were asleep in the house while it happened.
Did he cover her mouth? Yep. Do we know anything?
About to tell you all about it. The interesting thing about Barbara was that someone else also confessed to murdering her. 18-year-old Alvin Mitchell confessed that he did not remember stabbing Barbara, but he might have punched her several times. But she had been stabbed 6 times in the second floor bedroom in her home. And when Alvin was on trial, he said he signed a confession that detectives had written because the police had abused him until he gave them what they wanted. The police beat him with rolled up newspapers and submitted him to 50 hours of questioning.
Rolled up newspapers like a dog?
Yep, just like a dog. The detective told Mitchell to say that he had blacked out before the killing and his punishment would probably only be 2 years in an institution.
That is not how that works.
Yeah, I know, but they needed someone to pin it on.
I hate that.
He ended up recanting.
Because
6 days after the Genovese murder happened, Winston Mosley was arrested for burglary. He had been pulling a TV out of someone's apartment when a neighbor stopped him, and Mosley was like, "I'm just a mover." When that neighbor asked another neighbor, and that neighbor was like, "No, they're not moving." So they called police, and one of the neighbor guys went downstairs and immobilized his car. Like, where was that neighborly love when Kitty was screaming that she was being stabbed?
Ugh. Because that's non-confrontational. That is not walking to danger. People are always like, "Oh,
you're like, I'm going to save this TV, not this woman."
They're always you always think, "Oh no, like that's a thing." Like, people are more likely to run. I mean, I guess like it's different now, like 2021, it's all about like, I feel like we as human beings have done better with that. And like and I say we as in like millennials especially, are the generation of like take action, not so much like sit back.
Yeah.
And, but people are more likely to try to protect someone's home or protect their neighbor's belongings than running towards danger where they're like, "That sounds bad. Someone else is probably going to help. If I can hear someone else can, they're probably,
somebody's going to handle that." Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the police come and Winston's car is searched and they find the television in the trunk of this white Chevrolet Corvair. And interestingly, this was the same car seen at the murder location of Kitty Genovese. So they question him. "I don't know what you're talking about." "Nope." They say, "Well, your car was there." So he confessed to murdering Kitty and Barbara. And in February, only a month before Kitty's murder, he broke into the home of 24-year-old housewife Annie Mae Johnson, shot her, raped her, and then burned the house down with her in it.
What? Can you imagine someone knocking on your, like knocking on the door, "Knock, knock, knock. Mrs. Mosley, I need to talk to you about your husband." "Well, what do you mean? He's nice."
Yeah.
"No, he just admitted to 3 murders. We need to..."
Yeah, and he explained all of his attacks were random. He left his family asleep at 2 a.m. and he drove around for an hour the night before he killed Kitty. He just knew he wanted to murder someone and he was looking for a very specific woman to kill.
So he had no idea she was gay.
Nope. He just wanted a woman to kill because he said women were easier because they didn't fight back, which wasn't true because Kitty had defensive wounds on her hands from their little kerfuffle.
Yeah, she wasn't going down without a fight.
Mm-hmm. And she's screaming and like begging for help too. So she's obviously like trying to push him away.
Yeah.
Mosley had seen Genovese when she left to go home and he stalked her before he murdered and raped her. He also admitted to 8 other random rapings and between 30 and 40 burglaries.
Oh my God. We've said it before, like with other cases where these horrible, horrific people have full
lives.
Yeah, like legitimate families.
Jobs and children and 5 German shepherds. That's too many German shepherds.
That is too many German shepherds. Like, get your shit together. That's too many dogs.
Jesus. Especially in a New York City apartment.
Yeah. Your poor neighbors. And now your poor wife. Holy crap.
Yes.
But it is always fascinating to me when they're like, like the Ted Bundy, where it's like he had this, like this whole life. Normal and it's life. Like, yep. How do you shut that off? Like how, I mean, I don't want to know. I don't want to know how people do that, but it's insane. Cause I feel like I can read every mood my husband has. I can see it on his face. Like any, and granted he is the least, he.
You say he's the least likely to murder something, but he's probably out there. He's probably crawling out his window. He's not playing Rocket League.
Yeah, right. He's got a bad back. He's not going anywhere.
He's got a bad back.
And he like, he has worse social anxiety than I do.
You guys are just a real power couple.
We are. We're like, should we go out or should we stay in? You want to stay in? Okay, I'm good with that.
Let's never leave again.
Let's never leave. We have to find more outgoing couples than we are. Ding, ding, ding. There you are.
I went. Winston detailed all of these murders and assaults to detectives. In Annie Mae's case, the 24-year-old housewife, he stated that she had been shot. But on her record, it said she was stabbed. So detectives flew to North Carolina, had her body exhumed, and found that she had been shot 6 times. So he was not lying. He was telling.
So they never thought that her death was an accident, or they never thought that her, they knew that she had been shot.
Yeah, they knew she had been murdered.
Murdered. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I was wondering. Like if he did it to cover it up, because I was like, damn. Like,
no, they knew she was murdered, but they had no idea who did it. And here's the worst, the kicker, I guess. He was charged with the murder of Kitty, but neither of the other two.
Wait.
Yeah, no.
Come again?
Winston Mosley was given immunity in the Kralik case, so he would sit as a key witness for Alvin Mitchell's case, the kid who they had forced to confess murdered Barbara, even though he didn't.
To get him off?
Yeah. They essentially were like, we will give you immunity if you say you killed this guy so that this guy doesn't go to jail for it.
Why can't they just say, hey, just kidding. Sorry, guys. Sorry about wasting your time, but this is the real murderer.
Right? I wondered that
how
too.
Does that not work?
It gets way worse because Mosley told them everything he had done to Barbara. He told them how he had stabbed her 6 times, including details like only the murderer would have known. The fact that he went in before dawn, he had climbed up the second floor, he knew where her parents' bedroom was and where they were sleeping. He went into the girl's bedroom, said he put a hand over her mouth because she made a sound, and he stabbed her to death with a steak knife. He gave all of these details.
That, to me, that would be enough to be like, hey, I know this guy's already having a trial, but let's pause.
So that trial ended in a hung jury because one person held out. One person was like, I don't know.
You know, that makes me mad.
And guess what? In Alvin Mitchell's second trial, he was convicted of first degree murder of Barbara Kralik. Yep.
Shut up.
Because Winston Mosley confessed in the first trial. He told them. In the second trial, they brought him back. And instead of telling the different jury the same story he previously given them, he said, I didn't do it and I don't intend to explain why. So Alvin spent 1 year and 8 months in prison before he was inevitably released because he didn't do it.
That makes me like my blood boil.
Isn't it so ragey? I was just like, this mother father, what a jerk. And there was no reason for him to not be charged in Annie Mae's murder.
Yeah.
Other than like, that he was being tried for Catherine Genovese.
I would have literally been like, hey, you know what? You backed out on your deal. So guess what, bro? Deal's off.
Yeah. And that's not how it worked though. Cause he did his part.
Or
right?
I would have been like, hey, you know what? Psych. We lied. We lied. You're still getting charged.
You just like light the contract on fire. Paper is a social construct.
You're going to jail.
Mosley initially pleaded not guilty in Catherine Genovese's murder, even though he had already confessed. I know. But
those are not my favorite, but it's always so funny to me when they spill their guts to police.
And then they're like, no, not me.
Not guilty. We just had that last week. It's like, not guilty.
He did change his plea. He changed it it to not guilty by reason of insanity.
Oh, of course he did.
And the jury, they thought about it for 7 hours after hearing his confessions, and he was inevitably given the death penalty.
Thank God.
And the crowd in the courtroom, they actually went wild. There was like applause and cheering, and the judge even said, "I don't believe in capital punishment, but when I see a monster like you, I wouldn't hesitate to pull the switch myself." It was like,
hey,
we love a dramatic courtroom.
I love it.
There's something so just like movie-esque about it that I'm just, yes.
I agree in burst of insane. I agree that there are instances when it's like, all right, yeah, you're crazy. You get it. But not repeatedly.
Yeah. Not three times randomly.
And all the other rapes, like, hello.
Here's the thing. You ready to get disappointed? Are you ready?
No.
New York City got rid of the death penalty after 1965. It was legal for very limited reasons. Mosley went back to court, got an appeal, and got his sentence cut down to life in prison. And they claimed that the trial court had erred by not allowing evidence of his mental condition.
What mental condition did he have?
The psychiatrist that evaluated him said he was schizophrenic with catatonic reactions beyond his control. He was incapable of stopping himself once he got the urge to kill. He could not distinguish right from wrong.
That is bullshit, because he raped how many times? Eight times without murdering those women.
Yeah, I know. So it's not just killing, it's raping. He did 40 burglaries. Like, this guy not doing nice things.
No, and the rapes were just him until he got the guts to go through with it. That's all that was. If he would have had just a little bit, any of those rapes could have turned into murder. And then we would have had,
we would have had a serial killer even more extreme than what we already have.
I'm pissed.
Remember how I said that wasn't the craziest shit this guy did?
Wait,
Buckle up.
Here I am.
Okay, are you ready?
I'm holding on to my chair.
1967, he gets his sentence cut to life in prison, and he has the ability to get paroled when the time comes around. But in 1968, he was in Attica Correctional Facility in New York serving his sentence. And this man, I'm sorry, it's awful and hilarious. He shoved a tin can of Spam up his butt. Yep. Spam.
I mean, I love Spam. Don't come for me. I love it. I don't know why I love it so much, but that is intense and I would assume very painful. Why did he do it?
I just want to point out that the original tagline for Spam was the meat of many uses. But I don't think that's what they had in mind.
I am sorry about your guys' speakers for that boisterous laugh. I don't belly laugh. I had to move my mic back.
Oh, yeah. It was, and honestly, I was curious. So I Googled the dimensions of a classic 12-ounce can of Spam, and it's not as dramatic as it seemed in my mind, but a can of Spam weighs about a whole pound, and it's 2x2x4x3x3.
That's pretty big, though, for a butt.
That's literally what I have written down right here. That's pretty big compared to a butthole. Plus sharp edges and no lube. No, thank you.
Just spit on it.
I bet he did.
But by the time he just licked that thing, one side of the can, the other side is dry. There's no winning here. There's no winning.
I know. Well, he shoved the Spam up a spout. he told prison the guards, he was like, "I need to go see the doctor." And the prison doc was probably like, "Oh, holy shit, dude, you stuck a whole can of Spam up your ass? You gotta go to the hospital."
I would be both disgusted and impressed.
Exactly, disgusted and impressed. So they take him to a hospital in Buffalo, New York, and the Spam was removed successfully. And when Winston Mosley and his single prison guard left the hospital, Mosley overpowered him, took his gun, and escaped.
What?
It was an escape plan. Like,
that is a very
so
unnecessarily painful escape plan, because you know you have stitches.
Like, couldn't you just say you're like stomach hurt?
Like, my appendix, it's rupturing, or shove something smaller. Yeah, you know, a whole Spam can?
A pencil, perhaps. I don't know. Also, if I escape from prison, I would lay low, right? What would you do? If you escape from prison, where would
I would nurse my butthole back to health in my room.
You know, delicately dab my butthole with hydrogen peroxide. You are
definitely pooping sheets of Spam after that.
I don't know. I always think, like, if I had to escape from prison, I would camp in the woods, like,
deep in... Oh, I would Shawshank Redemption it. Yeah. I would just go to a different country and that's it.
You would disappear, right?
I would go by the name, like, Glenda, and I would just be gone.
I'm going to start calling you Glenda. That's how we know this guy is a psychopath, though. He broke into someone's empty house and just chilled there for a few days. Then he got bored, and he called an employment agency and asked them to send a maid to the address.
Oh, no.
And when the maid arrived, he threatened her with a gun. He raped her and said that if she told anyone, he would kill her children. She didn't go to police. She didn't, because she was afraid. But she left a really weird message for the home's owners. And so that was like their vacation house. They didn't stay there all the time. So the homeowner called their daughter and their son-in-law and asked them to stop by just to see if everything was okay. And when they stopped by the house, Mosley took them both hostage. He raped the woman. He threatened to murder them both if they tried to escape. He took their car keys, their registration, and a picture of their kids and threatened to murder their children if they told anyone. And then he stole their car and left them bound and gagged. Also, side note on this that's also insane. The DA filed charges against the maid because she didn't report the incident.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, no, I'm not kidding you.
I have like 5 people on a shit list in New York police.
In 1968.
Yeah. This era of police are now on my shit list.
And guess what? They didn't catch him after that.
Wait, what?
He broke into another house and he took a mother, her daughter, and a baby hostage for 2 hours. One of these ladies was smart, though, and she convinced him. She said, you should let me go pick up the children at daycare. It's right across the street, because if I don't, they're going to suspect something's wrong and they're going to come over here. And when she went to pick up her kids, she called her husband, and her husband called the FBI.
The FBI calling in the big dogs.
Yep. So an FBI agent commandeered a diaper delivery truck. That's how you know we're in a different era.
Diaper delivery
truck. He commandeered it so that agents could get in it, because they didn't want to raise Winston's awareness that they were onto him. And they get in front of the house and they go and get the hostages out. So they were all fine. Nobody got hurt in this situation. And then that specific FBI agent, he went in there and he just sat with Mosley for an hour until he eventually said, all right, I'll go back to jail.
And he all right, you caught me.
He earned himself 2 more 15-year sentences on top of his life sentence.
Wait, that's it? I feel like that's not
enough. It's 30. He escaped and then the 2. So he got 2 15 years, but he was already serving life. I know.
How to put his ass in a solitary confinement, no Spam, nothing.
No Spam for you, friend. Never again. Also, why did they give him the can? That's crazy. Yeah,
I wonder if he bought it. Because even if you take the top. So here are my questions that I need. Did they peel back the top? Because I would think that if in a prison, you would not give them
like a sharp lid. Top. Yeah.
I mean, that's just common. He could do harm to himself or others. Was it
make a pretty good prison shank out of the top of a pop can of Spam? Yeah.
Was the top of the Spam open? Was it like Spam to anal cavity? Like, is that like, there's so many questions.
I know. I have these questions as well. And I don't know what happened to the Spam can. I hope it's in some kind of prison museum somewhere. The Spam.
I'm looking at my Michelob Ultra Seltzer right now, just like grimacing.
Just
like,
disgusted. It's probably, those edges.
It's like a size of a ravioli bowl, like the Chef Boyardee. Could you imagine?
No, I can't imagine Spam or ravioli going up my butt. Not today,
if
friend.
If you have tried this, please let us know. Sound off in the comments of the post. I'm just kidding. You don't have to. I'm not kink shaming.
You. Tell us what you put up your butt, please. I'm interested.
I'm just telling you, it's very impressive.
I'm going to do an Instagram story. What's the weirdest thing you put up your butt? Tell me now. I would tell a story, but it would embarrass my brother terribly. No, I will tell it anyways. We made him hold batteries between his butt cheeks when he was a kid.
That's dangerous.
It was children. I have brothers only. So just as I'm rough gonna say and mean.
It's 2021. That's assault.
That's assault, brother. Yeah, it was not nice. We also used to like lock him in the cold and in his britches. Poor little guy. He's much bigger than us now. Both of me and my older brother. Like, he could beat our ass for sure.
Yeah, he's like towering over you guys.
Okay. Back to this. Because we're not done with Winston Mosley.
Oh my God, I thought I was rid of this.
No, he went back to Attica prison. And in 1971, there was the Attica prison riot. And during these riots, the prisoners were demanding better living conditions. And it is one of the best known uprisings that brought on the prisoners' rights movement, essentially. And more than half of the inmates at Attica took control of the prison. He was part of that. They took 42 employees hostage. They kept control of the jail for 4 days. Authorities pretty much agreed to everything that they wanted, all of the demands. And when it was over, 43 people were dead, 10 employees, and 33 inmates.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. That reminds me very Orange is the New Black. Spoiler alert. Sorry, guys.
I have never watched Orange is the New Black. So thanks.
You really made me want to go to prison. Look kind of fun, but... I know it's not.
We know it's not fun. This rebellion that Winston Mosley was a part of, it shifted something in him, because afterwards he enrolled in Correspondence College. And in 1977, Winston Mosley earned his bachelor's degree in sociology from Niagara University. And he got straight A's.
You know, I'm not going to fault someone pursuing an education. He's still a douchebag, but I'm not going to fault that.
You know what's crazy to me? Remember how I said the Kitty Genovese case is in every single intro to psych book? It was in there in 1977.
So he learned about it.
He read about his own class because he was studying psychology. Yep. Isn't that crazy? And after he got his degree, he wrote an op-ed for the New York Times, the same one that like started this whole thing.
I'm not down for the New York Times ever. I'm sorry, but they are, to me, the New York Times reminds me of like the British press, and it's brutal.
Well, I subscribed to them just so I could read this article he wrote. So sorry, I'll cancel it. But I still need it for some information.
Cancel it or you're canceled.
It was so well written. You can tell he wrote it though so that he might be granted parole or like people would take pity on.
I'm sure.
Absolutely. I'll
guess what? No pity here. Suck it.
Nope. Here's a paragraph from that op-ed. The man who killed Kitty Genovese in Queens in 1964 is no more. He was also destroyed in that calamity and its aftermath. Another vastly different individual has emerged, a Winston Mosley intent and determined to do constructive, not destructive things. Today, I am a man who wants to be an asset to society, not a liability to it. I couldn't even make it out of the end because you can tell it's bullshit, right?
Like, yeah, because bullshit. Like he had 5 minutes of freedom and he kidnapped and raped 5 minutes. Like he wasn't even completely healed and he was doing horrible things. So no, I don't buy it. And I am someone that I truly believe in prisoner reform. I do believe that it's possible.
Yeah, but not when they're psychopaths, necrophiles.
No,
he was denied parole 18 times.
Is he dead?
He died. Winston Mosley died March 28th, 2016 at the age of 81. He was in prison for 52 years.
That gets me hot and bothered.
And he was one of the longest serving inmates in New York prison history.
That's why a lot of times, like I know you could argue, not you specifically, I know there are arguments that cost taxpayer dollars to keep these prisoners. But sometimes I mean, the case that we had last week, he was begging. Like,
yeah,
he was literally begging to be put to death. And it's just an easy way out
for
them.
Or to just be like contained also.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot control myself. I will kill again.
But I think that it's almost worse for them just having to sit it out and going up for parole 18 times and then being like, like, no.
Yeah, not a chance, friend.
You just turn right back around and walk out that door. It's not happening.
Because historically, this case that he caused changed, like, culturally changed a ton of stuff. Like, why would they deny you parole when it was your fault? Like, essentially, 911 had to be implemented and there are neighborhood watch programs now. And I mean, if it wasn't him, it would have been someone else, but still.
Yeah, it's, I hate that. And I hate that Kitty's girlfriend was outed unnecessarily.
I know. Like, there's so many just terrible parts of this story.
Like, honestly, that makes me just as mad as everything else, because there was no reason that her sexuality should have even been brought into the discussion.
Shouldn't. But I just think it's so crazy that being gay was illegal.
Yeah, we talk about it a lot with, like, our kids and, like, how, especially for our daughters, it's going to be such a big, like, it's such a change even from, like, what we grew up with.
Yeah.
Our kids will never know that. They'll never know a time. Like, they'll hear that it used to be illegal and they
be confused.
What? Yeah, because I feel like it was even, gay marriage wasn't legal. So our kids are growing up.
Gay marriage wasn't legal until 2015. Yeah.
It's like, it's our kids are growing up in an age where no one cares if you're gay. I care if you're a good person. I don't care about the color of your skin. And I know there are still closed-minded douchebags, but I'm hoping eventually all of them will die out and we'll have this, like, open mindset where our kids will just,
you know. I'm hoping they'll die out. I agree with you, but it was funny to hear you say.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. How someone lives their life, it doesn't matter. And it should never be a reason that they're being accused of murder, that they shouldn't be a murder suspect because of who they love. That's insane.
Yeah, I agree, Liz.
And it's honestly, like, I don't want to say funny because that's not the word, but they're like, you know what? Lesbian lovers, I bet she, yeah, right? She stabbed her in the knife with a vagina because, you know.
Because she flew into a jealous rage.
Sorry. I mean, we had been, Meg and I actually had the talk because my next case is also very brutal. And we were like, you know, we've been kind of
loosey-goosey.
We've been easy on you guys. We've thrown you for some lubes. You know, I think
we did so many, like, awful ones, though. We needed to give ourselves a break.
Yeah. It was, I mean, even the human trafficking one that I did was, I was like, oh, this is rough. But we are like, we have to live, not that we have to live up to our name, because
gruesome.
So that's what we will definitely post a picture for any of our young listeners. If you don't know what spam is, we'll post a picture of that the show.
Yeah. I already have the picture saved that I'm going to use. Don't worry.
That is, oh my God, that's insane. And that.
Well, I told you, like, it was a wild ride, right? You thought that it was over wild. And it was never over.
I know,
over.
So many times I'm like, okay, it's done. Nope. Wait, one can of spam later. It's still not done.
And even after that, there was a prison riot.
Yeah, I would die. I just have to come out and say, if I had a can of spam shoved up my butt, I would die.
That's, like, how you die in the prison riot. Like, that's how you go out.
It makes me so sad because I really do like spam.
You know, I was watching Finding Ohana, that new movie. It's kind of like The Goonies, mm-hmm, on Netflix.
Yeah.
And they talk about spam in it and how, and spam is really popular in Hawaii, yeah, because it's, you know, easily transportable there.
Yeah.
And I have never eaten spam because I think it looks gross.
It does look gross. And my grandpa, like, that's one of my, like, he used to make fried bologna and fried spam with, like, breakfast and, like, for sandwiches. And it's just, like, one of those, like, wholesome memories I have with him.
Yeah,
and,
like, meal.
Yeah, it's like, and now, like, with him, like, he's not, you know, he passed away. So it's like, if I get the chance to have it, my father-in-law, like, he also likes it. And when he is at the store and I come to visit, he'll be like, I got you some spam. And I'm like,
fry it up
hell
for
yeah.
you. So cute.
Fry it up for you.
So cute. You.
I mean, it's horrible.
Well, I read
you.
About
I think it.
It
had.
I legitimately researched some spam information.
I think it has like 4 billion grams of sodium in it.
Yeah, it's essentially just like ham and bacon, like the parts, mm-hmm, mixed together and like all chopped up. And there's less, it tastes less salty though, right?
I don't think so. I think it's still pretty salty.
You think
salty.
It's really salty. Okay. I was like, what does it taste like? Maybe someone can explain it so I don't have to actually taste it myself.
I'm going to make it for you. I'm going to make it like the hash brown casserole from won't even know.
I don't like, people hate it when I say this. My people, I mean my husband. I don't like hot meat sandwiches. So if you're going to make it, you got to cook it into something because I can't.
But you eat hot dogs.
Hot dogs are not sandwiches.
A hot dog is a round sandwich. That is essentially a hot dog on a bun is a round meat sandwich.
Look, there are hills that I'm willing to die on and this one is it.
We need to take a poll if a hot dog is a hot meat sandwich because I'm here. But you eat, and you eat cheeseburgers.
I mean, like deli meat. Yeah, like I can't get my sandwich toasted at Subway.
Because I'll Google a list of hot meats.
I'll eat a cheeseburger. I'll eat a hot dog. Also, a cheeseburger isn't a sandwich. It's a burger. Like it's a, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, but when you put it between two buns, it becomes a sandwich.
I guess. It becomes a burger. Hold on. I'm going to Google the word burger. See if it has it. And it just gave me like all the burgers like around me. Hold on. Oh, yeah. It says a hamburger is a sandwich. First sentence. A hamburger is a sandwich.
I don't know how that's a debate.
I'm gonna Google hot dog and see if it says a hot dog is a sandwich immediately.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
A hot dog is... It says a hot dog is a food consisting of a grilled or steamed sausage in the middle of a slit or partially sliced bun.
So it'd be more like a hoagie.
Maybe. Let's Google hoagie.
I love a hoagie. Like, let me tell you. Honestly, I love all sandwiches.
Oh, it says a submarine sandwich, a sub, hoagie, torpedo, hero, grinder, cylindrical bread roll split lengthwise and filled with meats. That's going to be my new about me section on Instagram.
Same. But you notice it said sandwich.
Sandwich, yeah, it says it. It doesn't say it on hot dogs, so I maintain the hot dog.
Yeah, but the hot dog itself is not the sandwich. When you slide it into a bun, it becomes a sandwich.
I guess you could say, like, is a calzone a sausage? Or a sausage, sorry. Is a calzone a sandwich? Because
no, it's
between
not.
Two layers of flaky bread dough.
Yeah, but it's like wrapped in it and sealed.
Yeah, so is a Hot Pocket a sandwich? I don't know.
It is. I think a Hot Pocket is a sandwich.
Hot Pocket is diarrhea in a cardboard tube.
I love Hot Pockets. I have the, like, I want to be like 32 years old, but I have the food taste of a 14-year-old boy, and I don't care. Like, I don't care.
Just pizza rolls and Hot Pockets.
Yeah, but I have the metabolism of a 32-year-old woman who's had three kids, so I can't live like that. It's like my cheat meals. My husband's like,
They're all cheat meals. I don't know what you're talking about.
He's like, what do you want? Like, you know, whatever you want. Go hard. I was like, I would like stuffed crust pizza, Hot Pockets, strawberry crunch bars, Fun Dip. I bought Fun Dip for the kids because
for the kids.
Yeah. Oh, not Fun Dip. I'm sorry. Dunkaroos.
Oh, yeah. Those are not for the kids. Those are yours.
No. I bought them in Kentucky when we were stranded in the ice hell. And it was a sleeve of them. Like literally like the box that's at the store. It was like the sleeve of them. And I ate the whole thing. There was like seven of them in there. And I'm like, well, this is the reason why I don't fit in these like six jeans. Like, it's like the, I have no idea.
Look, it's not the Dunkaroos. Okay. Like that was, you deserve those. Don't.
Yeah. I was stuck in Kentucky and I couldn't even get out of the driveway. Absolutely. I deserve those.
Like I'm willing to size up for Dunkaroos. It's fine. No big deal. Mm-hmm.
But that's also why I've sized up so much because I'm like.
You know what? I bought mochi for my kids thinking like, oh, they'll love this. It's like little ice creams that you hold in your hand and they hate them. So I ate like 10 mochi. 10 balls of mochi, strawberry, and those were all mine.
I just, yeah, sorry. We really got off topic there, guys.
If it's food, we will. That's what happens.
Yeah, sorry about the spam to Dunkaroo to mochi comments.
I'm not sorry.
Yeah,
enough
not
of you
really.
Have been like, no, it's fine. Do what you want. So now we're doing that.
Game on. We're going to talk. You can stop listening after the case is over. We're okay with that too. Honestly, this is the main time we get to talk during the week too.
Yeah, this is just our hobby, guys. You get to listen to it.
All right, guys. Well, I don't think we have any business to take care of this week. It's, you know, it's been kind of a crazy week, but
yes,
yeah.
That's the understatement of the century in my case. We will smell you guys later. Thank you.
That's it for today. Thank you all so much for listening to Gruesome True Crime with me, Connie, and Meg. We appreciate every single one of you.
We truly do. If you actually like us and you're not just trying to seduce and murder us, you can follow along or see extras from the show on our Instagram at Gruesome Podcast.
Or if you want to tell us our skin would make a nice lampshade, or if you have follow-up questions about the episode, follow the form on our website, gruesomepodcast.com, and email us. We love hearing from you guys.
You can listen to Gruesome at the links listed on that website, or you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you normally get your podcast fill. Thank you again. Be sure to subscribe. Check your back seat before you get into your car. And remember that on Wednesdays,
we're gruesome.
Bye.
Bye.